Blog Talk Radio.
All right. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the STEM Files on Blog Talk Radio, where we highlight the best and brightest in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. I'm your host, Tariq Muhammad, Chairman and Chief Scientific Officer of Original Man Scientific. I'm not currently joined by my guest host right now. He will be joining us for this, my co-host. He'll be joining us very soon. Today's guest is very close to home, very special to me. Her name is Nadia Muhammad. She's actually my little sister. Nadia, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
All right, how are you, sis?
I'm fine. How are y'all?
We're great. So my co-host hasn't joined us yet, but we're going to go ahead and get right into the show. So can you give us a little bit of background of yourself, where you come from, and what inspired you to get into sign language?
I'm from Harlem, New York, and I currently live in Richmond, Virginia, and what inspired me to get into sign language was when our mother was homeschooling us, and she said we needed more socialization. She wanted us to do something different outside of the house.
Right.
And we got involved into a program called Deaf Dance Jam Workshop and learned the alphabet, and I guess it was African-style dances incorporated with the sign language. And we had to learn different dances and incorporate it in there with each other. And from then on, it just carried on. I just didn't know how else to get involved with it until high school, my 10th grade year.
Right, right. And can you tell us more about sign language and what it really entails and how it can really be useful to society?
Well, sign language is how the deaf communicate. Before the deaf started to use sign language, there was an oral method that they used in schools, in deaf schools, and it would teach them how to mouth the words and basically pronounce the words, even though they cannot hear. So at the time, the method was very useful, but it wasn't teaching them anything, only teaching them how to speak. It wasn't teaching them math. It wasn't teaching them English. It wasn't teaching them science, it wasn't teaching them geography, it was just teaching them how to talk and form the words into lip read, because they think that you need to hear in order to be successful. Back then, that wasn't the case, and there was a man named Alexander Graham Bell that I'm pretty sure y'all heard of, the so-called inventor of the telephone.
Right.
He was very supportive over the oral method. And one of his parents was deaf. And he looked at her or him as being ignorant or didn't know anything. And so he basically felt that in order for them to thrive and to prosper, because they were poor growing up, that they needed to learn how to speak. But either way, they can't hear, so it doesn't make a difference. And it's this man named Thomas Hopkins Gallaudet and Laurent Clark. They went out. Laurent Clark is a French explorer, and he came in contact with a few deaf people along his way and realized that they were very intelligent. They just need to learn how everybody else needs to learn, and they can grasp basic concepts. They just need to learn it a different way. And that's when he met Thomas Hopkins Gallaudet, the founder of Gallaudet University in Washington, D.C. And from then on, they decided to develop programs and ways to teach the deaf, but in their way. Like how you can't teach somebody who speaks Spanish, you can't teach them in Portuguese, or you can't teach them in German. They're not going to learn anything.
Right.
So that's how some of that came about. And there's a whole lot of other things. But the deaf are very resilient in a lot of ways. And they had a whole civil rights movement. They basically piggybacked off of the civil rights movement that Martin Luther King was doing and decided to do their own because of how successful it was and how less violent it was. And they wanted to go about it in a less violent approach. Granted, some of them were angry, but they decided to go about it a different way.
Okay. Awesome. Before we go into it any further, we have our illustrious co-host with us, Jabril. How you doing, sir?
I'm Lego family. Illustrious, bro. You give me way too much credit. Please excuse coming on a couple minutes late, fam. Happy to be here as always. And everything. I'm listening in, making sure to be having a wonderful show. How you doing, little sis?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm well, my last bitch. I can't complain. Yes, ma'am. But, yep. Evening, everyone. Jabril Muhammad, co-host, chief engineer, and vice chairman. Happy to be here. Let's get it in.
All right, family. Great, great. Okay, Nadir, I had another question as it relates to sign language. You know, when we were younger, I watched you become very, just very in tune with it. I didn't expect you to take it as far as you did when we were in that dance program. So can you kind of tell us the moment where, okay, you knew sign language was the one. When you started the dance program and you took it as far as you did, at what point did you say, okay, this is what I want to do and this is how I want to contribute to society?
Well, I knew I was interested in it when I was in the dance program, but it started to get stronger the moment that I found out when I was at Huguenot, my 10th grade year, I found out that they had sign language classes, mm-hmm. and they considered it a foreign language. And at the time, I was like, how can it be considered a language if language is oral? Well, you have to talk it, but any language is anything that has its own grammatical context and its own structure within it. So sign language has its own rules and grammatical context, so it's considered a language. And it is considered a foreign language credit. And I did that from 10th to 12th, and it really started to kick off when I met Desiree Hines. At that moment, when I met her, I thought she was weird because she had a device on her head to help her hear, and mm-hmm. the way she talked, until I realized that she can't help the way she talks because she didn't hear growing up, so she couldn't develop her own language or her own way to talk because she couldn't hear how people were talking around her. Because that's how children get their language and how they talk, by based off of their surroundings from what they hear. And she couldn't do that, so she talked differently, she acted differently. But I liked her because she was different. And the relationship just grew from there. And when I found out about Gallaudet University and I found out they could let in hearing students, I was all in for it. And that's basically when I knew that this is something that I wanted to do. And you already know, growing up, I bounced back from being a pediatrician, a brain surgeon, a lawyer, and I just couldn't stick with one thing. But those fields interest me. I'd just rather do it a different way. I'd rather interpret for those people that is doing it, or interpret for those that don't have their own voice, than actually doing it myself. And you already know I still know a lot of things about medicine, so if I do decide to interpret in health and human services systems, then I'll be fine. But when it comes to interpreting, you don't really have to know what you're stepping into. You just have to know how to interpret it. And that's why there's a lot of paraphrasing and a lot of there's a lot of grammatical slang within sign language because of their own ways to how to communicate it. Like, say if you're interpreting for a math professor and you don't know nothing about trigonometry, but you know numbers and you know how to sign the symbols and everything like that, you can teach a deaf person how to do trigonometry. And you just do it in their own different way. But that's really what made it stand out more was when I met Desiree.
Okay. Would you like to talk more about Desiree, or is that, you know, something you want to?
Not at this moment, no.
Okay.
So
all right, cool. Gotcha. All right, so, Jabril, did you have anything real quick?
Yes, sir. So, one thing, I was really, really intrigued by the topic of this show because sign is something that I've actually been interested in. I told myself, you know, I wanted to learn more languages, you know, some of them being like Chinese, Arabic, Spanish, sign, and I wanted to learn at least one coding language. So I said, okay, with all that, I should be able to be well-versed in kind of any, you know, frame or any sphere of influence. So I think with sign, how has that deepened your connection to other people, both in general and, like, you know, with those who require sign to communicate, and kind of how has that taught you kind of some soft skills in terms of how to deal with others and how to be patient and how to be understanding when it comes to dealing with people of different backgrounds?
Well, Tag already knows I'm a very emotional person, and it is easy for me to get attacked. If you're typing it for somebody saying, like, the public school system or in general, you do gain a connection with them, but it has to be a more distant a distant connection. I'm still learning how to do that. I don't know how to, like, I get attacked easily. I don't know how to distance myself from people too much. I don't know how to not make it seem like, oh, I'm interpreting for this person, so I gotta have a connection with this person. I don't know how to disassociate myself from any of them. When I met Desiree, when you're signing with somebody, it's more deeper than when you're talking, because they actually have to sit there and look at you and be more attentive. And it's like, that's like if you develop, if somebody gives you a sign name, is your name in sign language or your personality in sign language, only a deaf person can give that to you, because they know more about you, because they're actually sitting there looking at your mannerisms and looking at how you sign, and that's how they gain your personality. So it's way more deep connection than actually talking to somebody orally. So.
Wow. I can only imagine how much closer or how much more of a emotional response sometimes dealing with or communicating with people on that level could be, you know, just because of the attention to detail and even eye contact that occurs when you're, you know, dealing with this, like, person-to-person or, like, one-on-one signing. And everything. Have you ever, I saw this video, I don't know if you saw it, there was this, like, woman signing at a concert.
Yes, I saw that. I
okay,
her.
That was lit. That was, like, so lit. I was watching, she was all amped up, but she was still keeping in step, like, she was on rhythm and signing, jumping, all this stuff.
You see the emotion that she has when she's signing, them songs. She has to give that same emotion that that song is giving out. A deaf person can't hear that, so when she's signing it, they get it and they understand the song and they get those same emotions that a hearing person would get from that song.
Right.
And even though she is Caucasian, you know how they say how sometimes they don't have no rhythm or all
right, right.
But when you're signing, you have to have that, what is it? I forgot the word, but she had a lot of rhythm and she had a lot of soul on her signing. And she was signing a rap song, and I've seen her sign other things. I've seen her sign gospel. She's even signed some golf songs. And to be able to do that, I want to be on that level. I'm not there yet, but I'm working on it. I can sign some songs, but it's not that it doesn't have that emotion in it yet. I don't know how to grasp that. You actually have to listen. She listens to the lyrics and she listens to the beat separately. And then she puts them together and develops her own way of signing to the point where it looks like it makes sense, but it's her own flair to it and her own twist on the actual signed word itself.
It's funny. When you were talking about Soul, I was like, that's a dope name, like the Soul Signer. Like, I think that's pretty dope. Like, that's pretty dope. Hang
on
to that.
That's my name.
The Soul Signer. I like that. But even in line with that, you know, we talk about, you know, this show is about, you know, highlighting those in the sciences. And, you know, when I think of sign language and I think of how systematic and how much attention to detail you have to have, could you, I guess, speak to just when learning or when you were learning sign language, like the systematic approach and just the methodology by which you kind of learn, like, you know, take us through like those beginning stages, intermediate stages, kind of getting to where you are now and how you relate, how you learned it to kind of that, like a scientific methodology.
Right. And like there was, when I was in high school, I was doing Spanish and sign language classes, and I was able to grasp the sign language more perfectly than I could with Spanish. And I don't know why. It's just easier for me. I guess because it's visual. And then I had English class, Spanish, and sign language all on the same day. So my whole brain was just jumbled with all different things, but it always went back to sign language for some reason. And when I'm reading something, I try to think of that word in sign language. And I try to basically sign it to myself in my head, just like when I'm hearing songs. I'll try to figure out the sign in my head and find it in my head to help me understand it better. But some songs, some of these rap songs, I can't understand at all. And so I have to put it in my own way to understand what they're saying. And that's where the grammatical context comes in, that you have to grasp it and understand it before you can jump right into it, just like you do with English. English is the hardest language to learn. And
wow.
when you're doing sign language is not universal. It is in some parts, but you can't go over in Japan and speak ASL, which is American sign language. They have their own sign language and their own system that they use grammatic-wise. And you can't go, just like if you want to interpret Chinese, you have to understand Chinese. You have to understand Chinese in order to sign it. You need to know what they're saying in order to sign it back. You can't just jump right into it. Just like I want to learn Spanish and I want to learn other languages so I can learn it in sign language to understand it and interpret more than just one language.
Wow. Mm. So you mentioned the grammar, and I understand the grammar when it comes to sign. So, like, what is it about, or how does sign change when you go from one method or one style to another, like American Sign Language, and I don't know, like another sign language style from there? Is it like kind of like the force that you use with your hands? Is it like, you know, is it more in the fingers? Like what are those types of things that kind of shifts going from one style to the next?
It's more, I'm sorry, can you ask the question again?
What about sign language, and particularly in the movements or motions and the gestures, changes from one style to the next?
Nothing changes. It's just the grammar and the context. Like, say if you need to say hi in Japanese sign language, it's just
their
letter, but in sign language. So you got to take the Chinese letters and put it into sign language. Because the Chinese letter can be what it is, but it might be different. It might not be the handshake you expect in sign language. Like the letter A in American Sign Language looks like an A. The letter B looks like a B. The C looks like a D. The C looks like a C. The D looks like a D. The E looks like an E, and so forth. And the H looks like an H, and a G. So forth looks like a G. But you can't form your hand and the Chinese alphabet, because your hand can't do but so much. You don't have multiple fingers and multiple shapes on your hand, so you have to learn the grammatical context, and you have to learn the letters in ASL in sign language that they have. So that's the only thing that really changes with that.
Okay. Wow. That makes a whole lot of sense. Definitely. It's like, you know, because like, as I'm thinking about it, I'm like, how do you sign in other languages? I think that's actually amazing. And it's like, you think about the levels or depth to signing and kind of what that means, person to person, like how you convey that. So that's really dope.
Thank you.
Yes, man. Tariq, you want to continue and go from there?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm actually just been sitting here learning more about sign language. When we were coming up as teenagers, I didn't take sign language seriously enough. I didn't take what she was doing seriously enough, and I kind of made fun of her a little bit, and I feel bad about it now.
Mm-hmm.
but now that I have so much more respect and more admiration for what she's doing in sign language now. So just coming from a standpoint of how other people see it, what has been the response from your friends and other members of your family as you advance in sign language?
Well, one of my closest friends now, Ms. Miller, I'm not going to say her first name, but hopefully she's listening. She was also taking up sign language classes with me in high school. And sometimes we do communicate in sign languages. I teach her some things that she might not know, or But for my other peers that don't really know much about it, they're just like, wow, really? That's what you're doing? And everybody's just so interested and intrigued by it. I haven't really gotten a negative response. Some people do tease me, be like, oh, you're throwing up gang signs, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just okay. And be like, gang signs, yeah. It's sort of kind of, some of the signs can be, like, I love you would be probably considered, but if you don't know what
that's
it
ironic.
Is.
Ironic. I love you.
Uh-huh. Because I love you is in the shape of a, like, it's the tattoo that I have on my arm. It's I put that on my body, and I know it's permanent, and I know that it's not really what I'm supposed to do, but I put that on my body because it's permanent, and that's permanent of who I'm going to be and what I want to be in life. And so I look at that tattoo every day, and I keep pushing forward when I look at it, because sometimes I just want to give up because it's so hard. It may not be hard to some people, but it is for me, just because I want to know more, and I want to be more into it, but I can't because that level I'm on right now. But
right.
When I get more into it, I look at that tattoo every day, and I'm like, this is permanent. This is something I want to do. This is something that I need to do, and it's something that I promised Desiree that I was going to do. And before she passed, she was like, when I was talking to her, she was like, are you still going to guide your day? And I was like, of course. And she was like, promise me you will. And I don't break my promises to nobody. When I say I'm going to promise something, I do it. And Tyreek know that.
Right.
And
right.
I don't make no promises that I can't keep. And so for me, it's more on a personal level. Like, if I don't make it, oh, my gosh, I'm going to disappoint her. But at least I try, right?
Right.
So for me, it's more of like, nobody really teases me. Nobody really picks on me. Of course, people joke around. They be like, oh, it's gay size. But that I just brush it off. I'm a very comical person. So I don't take anything too personally. I just let it brush off. I'm not a really uptight person. I'm real goofy, so I don't really take anything of it. But sometimes it does go too far, and I do have to put people in their place. And I'm fine by doing that because it's something that I'm passionate about and it's something I want to do. Like, Tyreek, no, I'm going to hold my tongue. So.
Lord have mercy. All right.
Okay. I'm just listening. Y'all sound so much alike. And it's like, it's low-key scary. Like, in the same, like, tone and everything. It's
I was
like
wondering
weird.
If you were going to catch that.
Yeah, like, I caught it, like, when she first heard about it, I was like, wow. I'm like, it's like who's to reach? Oh, man. But, yeah, like, that's, you know, talking about keeping your promises, you know, we're taught that our words should be our bond. And
right.
A lot of times it becomes, or it has become easy for us to, like, you know, give our word and then renege. And I think what happens was that you cheapen the relationships you built, if you built them, and you really start to whittle away or chip away at your level of character if you had it in the first place. So that's a very, very big or awesome thing that you hold dear to yourself, is not breaking promises, because that's a true show of character, and it's definitely awesome to develop that at a younger age so that they'd be able to be further developed as you grow and mature. So
yeah,
that's awesome.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yes, ma'am. You're welcome.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, and it's I'm glad you said that, Jabril, because one of the things that, you know, and I'm getting a little emotional, just a little bit, just a tad bit, because there was a time where I really didn't see the bigger picture of sign language. And, you know, as we're talking about, and I got to say this again, I didn't take it seriously. And as we're talking on the show and getting to know sign language more, I respect Nadia, my sister, way more now, and I appreciate her passion and her effort to go into sign language more now, because she's able to articulate it so well, and speak about it as if it's like second nature to her, and she's right about her loving it, because you can see how much she loved it in the way she talks about it. You don't hear people talking about things like this. No, you don't hear people talking about sign language. You hear people talking about other languages, but you don't hear people talking about sign language. So I just want to just say that Nadia, I'm extremely proud of you, you know, and how far you've come in this particular area of your life.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
All right, cool, family. All right, one question I had is as it relates to sign language's challenges. What were some of the challenges that you faced in learning sign language, and some of the challenges that you faced in, you know, and just being proficient enough to understand it?
Well, right now in my ASL2 class, my teacher is deaf. So he talks to us in sign language, but by the time you reach level 2, you should already know what he's saying, right? Wrong.
Wrong.
But what he does to help us is that he does something that you're absolutely not supposed to do as a teacher or as an interpreter. You're not supposed to mouth as you're talking because it's going reverting back to English. He basically signs English. Sign English is not accepted when you're interpreting in a deaf community. One, because English and sign language are two different things. You cannot sign something in English and then think you're going to do it. You cannot say something in English and think you're going to sign it in sign language and it makes sense to them. Wrong. You cannot sign. When you're signing, you have to do, like, say if you're signing, my friend is coming over Tuesday. You need to sign it basically backwards. Like, you basically got to be like, my house, Tuesday, my friend's coming. Or my friend, Tuesday, coming to my house. You can't say, oh, my friend's coming over Tuesday. They'll be like, what? They don't understand it, but they're going to be like, well, did she just really say that in English? And you're basically not going to be shunned, but you're going to basically look like as the English talker. They don't oust. There's a lot of rules when it comes to deaf community. Like in the deaf community, nothing's too personal in the deaf community. Like say if you, like you know how in the hearing world, if you ask somebody how much they pay for their house, it's going to be like, what? You're not supposed to ask stuff like that. You're not supposed to ask how much somebody paid for something. But in the deaf community, they let each other know how much they pay for an item to help them out so they might be able to go to that person. They're very community involved.
Wow.
We as hearing people are not. We're self-preservation first. In the deaf community, they are not like that. They cannot be like that at all. They have to be open because in the deaf community, they have a lot of struggles and a lot of obstacles they have to hurdle over, but they're stronger when they do it together. Just like as the black community, we don't do that at all whatsoever, especially with females. We're always downing each other. We always calling each other the N-word and bees and hoes and all that other stuff. And it's just like, wow, you're really bringing me down like that and not helping me. In a deaf community, none of that's acceptable at all. That's what I love so much about it. Like, when I go to the silent lunches and I go to the silent dinners, it's just like they're so passionate about their community and about helping each other because they know if one fails, all of them fail. A house divided cannot stand together at all. I know that's Abraham Lincoln quote, but I strongly believe in that. He was a very smart man in some areas. And you got to admit, that's a powerful quote.
Yes, ma'am.
And so for me, what the hardest thing is being more open. Because I don't really like to tell too many people about my business or my struggles, but in the deaf community, they want to hear about it so they can know more about you so they can let you in. So for me, the most challenging thing so far is opening up. It's not the language, it's not the talking, it's just about opening up. And my teacher being deaf, if something's wrong with you, he wants to know why you're not here. And then he's going to go into like, well, why did that happen? And you're like, well, why are you asking me my business? But you can't do that in the deaf community. Because they're not going to go running and telling your business. And that's the one thing I learned from them. They don't do that at all. Because it's not going to help them. It's not going to benefit them in any way. But for me, the most challenging thing is opening up and being more open-minded and stop being so closed off.
Wow.
You know, as you said that and then equated it to out the black community, you know, you talk about a people or a person in a community that is considered, you know, has a disability or whatever. You know, you talk about a people who, in a way, have been spiritually, mentally, culturally disabled.
Just like
for
us.
For centuries.
The black community.
You know what I'm saying? So, but we are, we struggle with our collectivism and working together. Working together and moving forward, you know, and it's like, man, a job has been done for us in this time, so that we really have an issue with that.
I got you.
Is that someone? Hold on for a minute, Jabra. Is that someone's background?
Yeah, I'm outside. You good? I'm fine.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm sorry about that. Go ahead, Jabra.
No, yes, sir. So. That comparison was so powerful because, you know, we could be more. The same thing when I went to, you know, West Africa and I saw that. Now, even though we have our own struggles and image issues over there, there's still a level of collectivism and working together that's present. And then even with, like, personal space or, you know, or telling things about yourself, it's the order of the day, something that everyone does. And we are so ego-starved and so... been so hurt for so long, and it's hard for us to do that. So that's a major point. I'm so glad you shared that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Exactly.
Definitely. Mm. Wow. So have those been that particular in terms of opening up? Has that been the only challenge that you've experienced so far?
Yeah. Because I find it to be real easy if you pay attention and you're willing to learn and be open minded about it. You know what I mean? I think outside the box, so it's just like, okay, let me just learn this, and it helps me. And if it's going to help me in the future, then I pay closer attention to it. But yeah, that's the only thing that I had a problem with.
Hmm. You know, you talked about the correlation between the black community and the struggles of the black community and sign language. It just kind of horsebacking off of what Jabril said. How do you think the sign language community can actually help the black community in the struggles that we're going through?
Learning better unity. They got a lot of it. You can learn a lot from them in that department. And learning how to work better together and stop putting each other down, because it's not going to help anybody in the long run. Because they'll kill a thousand of us. They'll kill one of us. They'll kill a thousand of their own to get to one of us. So that's how I feel. In that aspect, you can't just help yourself and not help anybody else. Because what benefit is it going to bring? Just like when I tell people what I'm doing, they're like, wow, you're helping us in a way. Because what if there's somebody or what if I can interpret for the minister one day, or the president, or somebody up on in the UN somewhere? That's what I think about. And that way it'll bring everybody together, and they'll see, oh, wait, we ain't got to be like this. We ain't got to struggle if we just help one another. We call on a lot from the deaf community in that way. A lot.
Mm. Wow. What are some of the outreach that the sign language community has done in the general community? Have there been any, you know, community workshops, different things like that in your area? Or? Okay.
Oh, yeah, definitely. They always get together as a community and they let other people in to interpret and stuff. At Virginia Center Commons, they have silent lunches and silent dinners every week or certain days of the month. And you can come in, you can sit down, you can talk with them in silent, but you cannot talk. It's rude to talk around a group of deaf people. Like, say there's two hearing people in the room and there's five deaf people in the room. You can't talk. You have to sign because it's rude. Cause they don't know what you're saying. But in the deaf community, if you're outnumbered by them, they will let you in and help you understand. They'll write you notes, stuff like that. You won't ever be lost. So there's that aspect. But they get really involved in all the communities, even though some older deaf people do not really mess with the hearing community too much because of what they went through growing up with the oral method and stuff like that, but they will let you in and they will give you a chance, especially when you're willing to learn their language. Oh, they're happy about it. They're ecstatic about
right.
it. They're willing and able.
Wow. Okay. Awesome. J. Jabril, you have anything real quick?
I'm just really wrapping my head around this thing with the
me too.
Comparison with the signing community or the deaf community and the black community. That right there might have been one of the most profound statements on the show.
Yeah.
I'm like, because, like, it makes you think, and that's why I think that, you know, we have a STEM-based show, right? The Best and Brightest in STEM. But we talk about so many things, social issues, science, technology, personal development, academia,
right.
Food, you know, strife, advances in all these different areas. And that's why when you talk about, and people say science is everything, that's not a cliche. That is not something that you just say because that's what everybody says. It really is the truth. And I think, I guess for you, I know you talked about translating long term. I guess if you got to a point where, say, like, you know, money or whatever wasn't an issue and you could do whatever you want as it pertains to signing, you know, what would that be? What would a day in the life of the soul signer be if you didn't have to worry about, you know, the general ails of life, if you will?
You're saying what would I do besides signing?
No. What would you do with it? Like, if, you know what I'm saying? Like, that, like, you know, all the resources available to you, not worrying about, you know, monetary gain, you're secure in that regard, but you just can utilize the signing and sign language and your skill in that matter in any way you choose.
I would be an advocate, basically somebody who, or basically some type of a social worker or in-home counselor, because there's a lot of things that deaf children go through, especially if they're the only deaf person in their family and everybody else is talking and they don't understand what's going on around them and they feel alone. And they do have a suicide rate, but it's not really talked about. Nobody really cares, right? They do feel alone. They do feel neglected. They do feel like they don't have nobody. When you can't hear and you don't want everybody and they're talking and laughing, you want to know what's going on too. And in a hearing family, if there's a deaf child, they'll try their best to get the child hearing aids and the cochlear device and all that invasive stuff. But you're not willing to learn the language, and it's free to learn. But the cochlear implant, the hearing aids, that's not free. That stuff costs. And I just find it interesting how they want – it's really hard for some people to lip read. You want them to lip read, but you're not willing to learn their language. You want them to learn yours so bad, but not willing to go into their world too. And I just think that's calling the kettle black. Like, it's a two-way street. Like, you want them to learn something, but you're not willing to do the same because you want to feel more comfortable, but you're not willing to make your child feel comfortable. And I think it's sad. And, like, my best friend, Desiree, she went through that growing up, and I saw the challenges that she had to face and what she went through with her parents and her siblings. And I was basically, when she came to school, it was me and a couple of other deaf students that she would talk to every day about her problem, and then her interpreter as well, but she came to me the most. Even though I was learning, I could still talk to her in some type of way because I understood what she was saying. And she would come to me, and she would tell me about her problems. And I just think it's sad. Like, I think there should be somebody to go into the homes and teach them, teach the family sign or some signs just to help their child feel more comfortable. But there is some services, but not everybody knows about them. And I think it should be more known and more accepted within the hearing community. Because they just like us, they can learn just like us. Like my best friend Desiree,
right.
She was way better than math than I was. A whole lot better. Like the girl could, like we was in geometry one day, and I'm just sitting here, she'll understand what her interpreter's saying and go right to work. She don't need nothing else. She didn't need no help. And everybody was like, oh, you got an interpreter, you got help, blah, blah, blah. She doesn't have help. If there's a test and she doesn't understand a question, she'll interpret it to her interpreter, and her interpreter would not tell her the answer, but basically give her paths to figure it out herself, because they can't tell you the answer. And she would just sit there in math class, just going and going, paper after paper after paper, and eventually she got transferred out the class because she was learning quicker and she was grasping the concept more. Granted, her interpreter was not good with math at all, whatsoever. But the fact that she can interpret it to her helped this child understand it, I find it to be amazing. And she was good with English. She passed all her classes. She got A's and B's. But every time I looked at her report card, she never had honor roll, but she had straight A's. Never had scholar roll, but straight A's. They didn't give it to her because they felt that she had help. And I just thought that was so sad. Like, she really didn't have no help. She just had somebody talking to her in a different way to help her understand the words. And they would not give her scholar roll. They gave her honorary honor roll. What is that? She got straight A's. In all her classes, all her advanced classes, all they gave her was honorary honor roll. What she gonna do that?
Honorary honor roll. That
exactly. What is that? That's what somebody who got all C's.
Ooh, that's some stuff right there. I'm gonna give you honorary honor roll. Wow.
And then she qualified for her advanced diploma, but they wouldn't give it to her either. And I'm just there was one day and I was mad because when she told me, I couldn't do anything about it. I already graduated. I was a year ahead of her. But when she told me, I was like, excuse me? And she was like, they won't give it to me. And I was like, why? And she was like, you know why. And I was like, really? And
they're
she was like, yeah.
To
she was like, she would even prove to them that she knew the work herself by telling her interpreter to leave the room. And she done all her tests and everything without the interpreter being there, and they still would not give her credit that where it was due. And it made me so mad because I'm like, this girl is smarter than
like,
most people that
I.
That's
crazy.
Like they did her dirty, and it just made me so mad. I'm just like, you gotta be kidding me. And I'm like, okay. And she was like, but you know what? It's okay. She's like, because I know what I did. You know what I did. Everybody else knows what I did. She was like, I don't need that paper to prove what I know I have. And she got her diploma and she wrote on it, advanced diploma. Wrote in big red and big black marker, and she wrote it across it. And she started laughing. I'm like, what's funny? She was like, because. She was like, this is just a piece of paper. She was it's not defining what I know or who I am. But she was like, but I am going to write advanced diploma on this. And she did it. And she was just so, And
that's crazy.
She passed away when she was 18. In her sleep, she had a heart virus, and she passed away in her sleep at home because the doctors just kept sending her. They just kept sending her home, and they didn't know what was wrong with her, but there was something going on with her heart. But she always had health problems ever since when she was younger. She was fine, but when she got the cochlear implant when she was about 4, she started having all these health problems. They had to keep cutting her head open, going in. The implant would shock her in her head and stuff like that, and she would have these real bad migraines. Every time a little bit of water got into it, it would shock her because they didn't have the inside of the implant in her head. They didn't have the proper covering over it, and it just gave her all these problems. And I'm like, so she was fine before she got it. She gets it, and she's sick. And that's why I don't like it.
Well,
it's very invasive. I think it's pointless. There's a big chance that it won't work. The big chance that it will work, or it'll malfunction, or the child will still be deaf in 1 ear. But when she had it in, she was considered hard of hearing because she could hear out of 1 ear. And when she took it off, she was deaf again. So it was just like, come on now. It's either one or the other. It can't be both. And sometimes she would take it off because she was just tired of it. And there was sometimes she told me she wanted to cut it out herself, and I was like, you can't do that. And she had all these problems after the implant. And I'm just like, okay, it's got to be another way. It's got to be something else. And that's another thing that I was telling my brother about. I've been trying to figure out another way, but I don't have the resources to do that at the moment. But I'm pretty sure there is one. There's got to be. It can't just be one way. You can't put all your eggs in one basket. And if it's really that serious, and really some deaf people do want to hear, it's for some deaf people, they just want to hear the rainfall or hear birds chirp or hear cars going by. They want to hear simple stuff.
Right.
But that's why some deaf
and you
people
talked
do
about...
it because they just want to hear. And sometimes they just want to hear their parents' voice.
Right, right. You know, you, again, we take a lot of those of us, you know, we talk about a lot of hate and gratitude. And those of us who have all of our general faculties who can wake up and take in the atmosphere, who can see, behold, and hear the rainfall, who can speak in the quote-unquote, you know, general language of the day, who can touch, who can feel, who can walk, you know, we really, in the grand scheme of things, have nothing to be sad, upset, depressed, or ungrateful about. You have people who go throughout their lives who are not afforded or have lost or born without, you know, the certain general requisite like, you know, abilities that we have. And mm-hmm. I think that, furthermore, you talked about basically your friend not putting so much weight on what an established institution has said about her in regard to her intellect or ability. And I relate that to the times we're in. See, we have a great sign in our midst in the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And he's using a language that some people find offensive or find to be, they won't really say untrue, but it's you know, it's offensive and, oh, why would you say that? And
what?
We, as those who proclaim to follow him and what he represents, cannot put so much weight on the institutions that say he is something that he isn't. You know, we have to be very vigilant in not only seeing him as the sign, but understanding what the sign said. So kind of in that same line with sign language, we have a time where there's a flood, there's a lot of propaganda, and we have to be careful of who we listen to as the interpreter.
Right,
and
right.
And it's so important that we stand, because we know without him, I know for those in our generation, we wouldn't know Elijah. I wouldn't even be here. I probably wouldn't be born if it wasn't for the minister. We know who he is and who he isn't. And we have to basically be found following the master interpreter, or taking our coloring, taking our interpretation from him and what he represents. So I know I went off topic, but I really didn't, because you brought so much out when you were talking about that. I just wanted to highlight that. And, yeah, and for those listening that didn't know, yeah, we had the STEM file stand with Farrakhan. Just throwing it out there.
Yes, sir.
We can talk about that
sir.
Another time, but we wanted to make sure we made that very clear.
Very clear.
That, you know, we're not shaken by, you know, what's going on in mass media right now. And we're going to keep moving what we've been doing on the STEM files and keep pushing for, you know, bringing STEM to the inner city, to the community, you know, bringing the best and brightest on the show, and also bringing something tangible for our people and those who want to see change to benefit from. So, you know, we're on a mission, and we're not going to be stopped now. So thank you so much just for, like, you know, everything you're saying is so key. And I can feel your passion when you talk about it and how much this means to you. And I'm just thankful that you've been willing and so open in your sharing of what you've gone through, your successes, and some of your struggles and your relationships. So thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
Nadia, that most definitely. And we do plan on helping you in it, because one of the things Original Man Scientific does is we help people with their ideas and with what they want to do and some solutions they may have to human problems. So when we're done with the show, I'm going to, you know, reach out to you and tell you how we can help you with your alternative solution to hearing implants.
Okay.
Well, another question I have for you is a lot of us are successful because there have been people that have inspired us or have mentored us or have been some type of example to us for us to follow. Who are some of your mentors or the people that you look up to or people that have made a difference in your life for you to keep going at the rate that you're going?
A lot of people. well, first, Timo-wise, Madam C.J. Walker. just because that she ought to, like, back then what she did for the black community or for a woman in general, I thought was very bold. And then as far as, like, the deaf community goes, I do admire Thomas Hopkins got you that, and Edward Miner got you that, and Laurette Clark. And because of their advancement within the deaf community, and they didn't shun nobody based off of their color either. But, you know, there's still there's black people that are deaf, and back then they couldn't really let people into the school system and stuff without being segregated. But at that point in time, they didn't care. They wanted to let everybody in so they could learn the same way as the deaf community, because whether they were black or white, they were still part of the deaf community. And can you imagine being black and deaf at that point in time?
And, right.
And a female or a male in general, being both of those back then at that point in time was probably you had to be very, you know what I mean. I lost my words.
Right, I got you.
But who else? My teacher, my sign language teacher, the fact that he's able to sign language in sign language. To him, I know that has to be kind of difficult, because some of us are looking at him like, what did he just say? And sometimes he looks at me, and because I've had a class before, and he looks at me, and I'm the only one that's basically don't have my scrunch face up. Well, one of three that don't have their scrunch face up. Like, what did he just say? And he calls on us three to help him sometimes to. Because we're not allowed to talk in the class, but when there's something that nobody understands and we grasp it, he lets us talk and tell them, the ones that don't understand. Mm. And
okay.
But yeah, those are the main four.
Okay. What about other than professionally in the class, and what about personally? Has anyone personally that has, you know, inspired you, like family, friends, like, is there anyone in those particular areas?
Well, Desiree, you, who else? Somebody else that keeps pushing me every day, somebody who I consider to be like a mother, who's taking me in and basically pushing me forward. Even though there's sometimes I wanted to quit, and there was sometimes where I was messing up, and she'll be right there. And I do consider her to be like a parent figure, and as somebody else that I do consider to be as a father figure. Besides Grandpa, there's somebody else. Failure is not an option. That quote is. I live by that echo every day. I have it on a shirt. I have it on my wall. It's on my Instagram, my Facebook. It's everywhere. That quote is very powerful. But for me, it's not an option. But yeah.
Okay. Cool.
And mommy, when she put us in the program. That right there just started it all. That right there was the root of it all.
What role has your has mom played in your development as an adult and as a person that's passionate about something?
Well, mom started homeschooling us. I was very excited at first, and then when we need to interact with more people. But she wanted to go about it a different way. She also wanted us to learn in the process. And she put us in a program. And I was more into it than you were. But
I just wanted to go because it was we got to just, you know, get out the house, but just, you know, be in a program or what have you. But I didn't like the dancing. I didn't like the signing.
Yeah, I liked both of it. I liked all of it. I was so excited when we went to practice. And it was just a lot of work. You know, there was a lot of pain and all the walking and everything else. And then when she decided to put us in that program, I was like, okay. At first I was nervous, but I was started by it. And then, you know, Mimi was in the part of the program too. It was very eye-opening. She exposed us to a lot of things that you wouldn't really expect to be exposed to. But I'm grateful for that. I really am, because if it wasn't for her decision to do that, to realize that we did need more, I guess, stability or programs, and she put us in there, it was a good move.
Absolutely. Well, I just want to say, Jabril, you still there? So I want to thank you on behalf of myself and Jabril for joining us tonight. It has definitely been a very, let's just say it's been a classroom for me, and I'm sure the same for Jabril. We learned a lot. I learned a lot about sign language, and I learned a lot about you as a person. So I just want to thank you for joining us, and we can have you on the show again.
All right. Sounds like a plan. Thank you.
No problem. Jabril, you still there?
I appreciate it.
No problem.
Oh,
no. Okay. all right, so this has just been another cracking open of the STEM Files. I just had my first family member, biological family member, on the show for the first time, my little sister, Nadia Muhammad, future sign language interpreter. Is there one thing I want to ask you, Nadia. We asked this to all the guests on that come on the show. If someone came up to you and asked you, Nadia, what does science mean to you, and why, and what did it mean to you personally? What would you tell them?
Science to me means more. It means more innovation. It means more ideas that can be created and more things that can be created to help the different communities that are in need. You know, when mommy went through her thyroid problems, that right there was the point where I wanted to go more into it, but I was kind of tedious about going into it because it was like, what if I find out something, and then there's another way, but there's no way of doing it. And then when you decided to do the whole Navy beam, with the Navy beam that you were doing, the smell that it would make, I was just like, oh my gosh, this thing's so bad. But I knew why you was doing it, and I understood why. And, you know, a lot of people would say, science and God don't go hand in hand at all. But that is so not true. There's a lot of things that he has done, and there's a lot of things that, my thing is, the human body, the way it moves and the way it operates, it moves like an interstate or a highway with different blood vessels and the different arteries.
Yeah, yeah.
And I find it to be a coincidence that when you look at a tree, it looks like the leaves on the tree and the veins and that's on the leaves going up and down and across, that kind of looks like what's going on in our body.
Right.
And that's nature. And I find how they go, if they go hand in hand, why can't God and science go hand in hand?
Right.
But that's
right.
What science means to me.
Wow. Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you again for being on the show. I think we probably end the show before Jabril gets back. But thank you again for being on the show. Ladies and gentlemen, this has just been another cracking open of the STEM Files on Blog Talk Radio. We have another double feature that's to be decided next week. But please tune into our next episode, which is Saturday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. On the 17th, that's when the show is back on the air. Thank you again, Nadia, for joining us. And
yeah,
may God continue
you,
to bless you.
I am back.
There
I
you go.
How are you just going to end this? Minute?
I was like, he should be back any minute now.
Hold on.
I was just about to close out.
If you know how the show goes, I close the show out. All right. That is my...
Yeah.
So,
I was like, he's going to jump in any minute.
Without any further ado, Yes, family, this has been another cracking open of the STEM Files. I am your co-host,
Lord
Bro Muhammad, vice chairman of Virginia Scientific and Material Engineer, is your illustrious host, Tariq Muhammad, chairman of Virginia Scientific, chief scientific officer. We've had our wonderful, 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 wonderful guest, his little sister, but this great woman in her own right, Sister Nadia. Thank you so much.
Yes.
Learned so much. Like, you've literally been one of my most enjoyable shows, and I think that it's been one of the ones where I thought you're very welcome. You've been, I thought, the deepest, because there's been a lot of, like, different scientists and, you know, things that STEM shared, but I think this is one of the first shows where the connection is not readily seen. You have to really kind of think about it and then kind of get under it and see how language, first in general, is a science, and then science, you know, it's something that, you know, people may not even think about. So thank you so much. I see where Tariq gets it from. And everything. So, you know, keep on doing that. Keep on doing that, you know what I'm saying? Because being that role model for him. The Lord knows he needs
it. You know he looked up to me on the low, so.
On the low. Nah, you're going to always be my sidekick, so don't even go there.
No, you're my sidekick, so.
Oh, man.
But it's all good, though.
Yeah, so thank you so much. See, that's how you end it. That's how you do it, right there.
All right, family. Well, thank you for joining us. This has been, like Jabril said, another Cracking Over the STEM Files. Peace, family.
Hello?